Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We hear exciting developments from Margaret Downey of the Thomas Paine Memorial Association.
Then we meet Vamsi Mata, a Dalit in the so-called Hindu untouchable class,
who talks about the ongoing harm of the caste system.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. In Gaza, as medicines for Israeli hostages were reportedly allowed into the enclave for the first time on Thursday, along with a consignment of relief supplies for Palestinians, UN humanitarians warned that the level of assistance for many Gazans was almost catastrophic. The development came as UN Aid Coordination Office OCHA reported ongoing intense Israeli bombardment and rocket fire into Israel by Palestinian armed groups. According to the UN World Food Programme, WFP, the continuing violence has made it nearly impossible to distribute aid relief much beyond Rafah in the south of the Strip, where well over 1.2 million people now shelter in dangerously overcrowded conditions. The WFP alert echoes repeated appeals for greater access by other UN agencies working to reach all five Gaza governorates. In the first 2 weeks of the year, humanitarian agencies planned 29 missions to deliver life-saving supplies north of Wadi Gaza. Only one in four made it after Israeli authorities denied the rest, according to OCHA. Top rights experts appointed by the UN Human Rights Council have begun their work to investigate grave allegations of crimes in war-torn Sudan, the UN Human Rights Office reported on Thursday. Chair of the UN fact-finding mission on Sudan, Mohamed Chande Othman, said that Sudanese civil society organizations and others had started to share information with the investigators this week in Geneva. These allegations underscore the importance of accountability, the necessity of our investigations, and the vital need for the violence to end immediately, Mr. Othman said. It has been 9 months since Sudan's rival militias began fighting. It's left thousands dead and displaced millions. The Human Rights Council appointed the fact-finding mission's three investigators on the 18th of December. Their work will pay particular attention to allegations of sexual violence and the military recruitment of children. To the Philippines, where the UN-appointed Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Opinion and Expression, Irene Khan, is to conduct an official visit to the country in the coming days. Official visits are a vital part of the work of Special Rapporteurs who report back to the Human Rights Council. During her mission from the 23rd of January to the 2nd of February, Ms. Khan's priorities include assessing the safety of journalists, human rights defenders and civil society actors in the Philippines, in addition to examining the country's legal and policy framework with regard to freedom of opinion and expression. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Lay your hands on the radio! Lay your hands on the radio, band at home!
It's that psychedelic time of the year. Do you know where your brain cells are?
Blog Talk Radio.
You know, there's an enormous industry in this nation that is churning out day after day at the cost of billions of dollars the sensation, entirely erroneous, in the body politic that everything is okay and everything's going to keep on being just the way it is now on into the indefinite future. But of course,
Radio Free Canada
have not purchased that bill of goods.
Remember, all I'm offering is the truth.
You can handle the truth!
Welcome to Radio Free Canada.
Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Dell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas.
Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try. No hell below us.
Welcome to Beat That Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And today, which is January 18th, marks many important Free Thought birthdays in the past, among them Montesquieu, who said, if triangles made a god, they would give him three sides. Montesquieu was born January 18th, 1689, and A.A. Milne, who wrote Winnie the Pooh, was born today in 1882, and he famously said, the Old Testament is responsible for more atheism, agnosticism, disbelief than any other book written. Do you agree, Dan?
I do, and I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You might have guessed from those opening remarks. This is the January 18th, 2024 episode of Free Thought Radio. Our engineer, again, is Tori Neal. She's with Audio for the Arts, and she's right here in our studio, the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, which is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And the Freedom From Religion Foundation is the producer of Free Thought Radio, and FFRF has so many other activities and purposes. We are the nation's largest association of atheists and agnostics and skeptics, over 40,000, and we are a state church watchdog, and we have never needed more to have those of us who agree with separation of church and state and free thought to band together. And you can get free information at our website. Click the Ask for Info link at ffrf.org or just join us today at ffrf.org.
What is it like to be an untouchable? In the second half of today's show, FFRF's Director of Communications, Amit Paul, will talk with Vamsi Mata. He is an artist in residence here at the University of Madison in Wisconsin. University of Wisconsin here in Madison, who is from the Dalit class in India, which is beneath the lowest level in the Hindu caste system. Vamsi will tell us how religion has harmed not only the untouchables in India, but how the system of religious oppression follows them wherever they live in the world.
And before that, we'll have a guest, Margaret Downey, with the Thomas Paine Memorial Association to tell us about the exciting event coming up that celebrates Thomas Paine's birthday, January 29th, and also developments toward getting that permanent monument erected to Thomas Paine, America's forgotten founding father, in our nation's capital.
FFRF has a weekly Ask an Atheist talk show on Facebook Live, and this week the topic was the ultimate captive audience, dealing with religion in prisons. FFRF attorneys Liz Cavell and Chris Line spoke with Jeff Blackwell. He's the litigation counsel with American Atheists about its recent legal victory prohibiting the state from offering exclusively religious options to drug and alcohol counseling with no secular alternatives.
The problems non-religious prisoners face are numerous, and Liz asked Jeff about the pervasiveness of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a religious program.
It's just deeply frustrating how systemic and pervasive AA is in our culture, when it is not only expressly religious, but if you dig into the big book, which is there like, let's say scripture, there's a whole chapter. Chapter 4 is titled We Agnostics, that basically says if you're a non-believer, you're just doomed to an alcoholic death, is, I think, a direct quote from the book.
Yeah.
It's expressly anti-atheist. If the roles were reversed and Christians were being forced into a program that said, you know, Christians are doomed to fail and all of that, there would be an outcry. And it doesn't happen with AA or any other 12-step equivalents. It's just infuriating.
Yeah. And that's to say nothing of, and we won't get into the inefficacy of AA as substance use treatment, which it is not. So it's compounded, you know, the insult and the injury compounded to atheists who are also trying to recover and reenter life with substance use disorder. It's just a bad situation.
And you can watch that Ask an Atheist show on FFRF's YouTube channel by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And a new episode of Ask an Atheist airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live, on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the live show.
On our TV show, Free Thought Matters, this week, we talk with British philosopher A.C. Grayling, the founder of the New College of the Humanities in London, and author of more than 30 books, including The History of Philosophy and the God Argument.
And we ask him, what would you say to religious people who ask you, how can we be good without God?
The first thing to mention, of course, is that if you're moral because you're afraid of being punished or because you want a reward, that's not a very good reason for being moral. The really good reason for being moral is the fact that you care about and you have concern for your fellows, for other creatures, for the environment, for our world, for our societies. And the way that we find what it's good to do and how to behave towards our fellows and to our world is by looking, being attentive, being careful, being sympathetic and generous in our attitudes to other people.
You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters right now on FFRF's YouTube channel. Look for it on the FFRF Matters playlist.
And if you live in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., or here in Madison, Wisconsin, where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local TV, you can watch that show every Sunday morning or Sunday evening here in Madison. For stations and time in your area, check fffrf.org/freethoughtmatters, or just go to our website, fffrf.org, and look under the news dropdown.
And there is a lot of news, speaking of news, and in the last week, the Congressional Freethought Caucus, which FFRF often works with, has laudably exposed the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson's very serious Christian nationalist agenda.
For example, Christian nationalists gathered in December at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. for a National Association of Christian Lawmakers gala, at which House Speaker Mike Johnson delivered the keynote address, and he received their American Patriot Award for Christian honor and courage.
He didn't think there was any media there, but somehow his talk got recorded. Well, it was streaming on Facebook Live, duh. And here are some of his remarks.
I'll tell you a secret, since media is not here. Thank you for not allowing the media in. I'll tell you a secret. The Lord impressed upon my heart a few weeks before this happened that something was going to occur. And the Lord very specifically told me in my prayers to prepare, but to wait. Prepare for what? I said to the Lord. I had this sense that we were going to come to a Red Sea moment. But, you know, the Lord speaks to your heart. And he had been speaking to me about this. And the Lord told me very clearly to prepare and be ready. Be ready for what? Okay, I don't know. We're coming to a Red Sea moment. What does that mean, Lord? And then when the speaker's race happened and Kevin McCarthy was vacated from the chair, oh, wow, well, this is what the Lord may have been preparing us for. I was started praying more about that, and then the Lord began to wake me up in the middle of the night and to speak to me. And now at the time, I assumed the Lord is going to choose a new Moses, and thank you, the Lord. Lord, you're going to allow me to be Aaron to Moses. And so I worked to get Steve Scalise elected speaker. That didn't happen. And then Jim Jordan, who's like another big brother of mine, no, that didn't happen. And then Tom Emmer, and, you know, ultimately 13 people ran for the post. And the Lord kept telling me to wait. So I waited. And then at the end, when it came to the end, the Lord said, now, step forward. Me? I'm supposed to be Aaron. No, the Lord said, step forward. Only God saw the path through the roiling sea. And I believe deep in my heart that God wants us to seek him for the path through the roiling sea.
So that's the long way of him saying that God appointed him Speaker of the House, made sure he was Speaker of the House, and he's the new Moses. And parting the Red Sea, I guess, is his Christian nationalist agenda, clearing the way for that. And, you know, he has called himself a legal ministry. He says he's on the front line of the culture war. He's talked about spiritual warfare, how this is a Christian nation, and he works with groups that want to create a biblically sanctioned government. And, Dan, he's two heartbeats away from the presidency. So you can read that report by the Congressional Freethought Caucus at our website under the news link, or you can of course, Google it through the Congressional Freethought Caucus. It's an excellent report.
Now, talking about mixing government and religion, our group is denouncing Christian nationalism at the Louisiana governor's inaugural. The Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry is elevating Christian nationalist voices during these official events. In fact, had a disturbing prayer at his inaugural ceremony. On January 7th, at the Louisiana Capitol, Tony Perkins gave the prayer. He's the president of the Right-Wing Family Research Council. It's an evangelical Christian organization which has been deemed a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Let's listen to a little bit of that three-minute prayer, just a few seconds of that prayer.
Father, we thank you for today. We thank you that we can approach your throne of grace because of the redemptive work of Jesus Christ. Today, we declare that we will look to you and to the power of the Holy Spirit. We pray that the words and the deeds of our leaders would glorify you. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
So the Louisiana governor, who's taking an oath of office to uphold our godless and secular constitution, is now supposed to use his office to glorify God. And so we wrote a very strong rebuke to the governor of Louisiana over that. But we are seeing Christian nationalism rising every day among many, many governmental officials. So it's a real threat to our secular democracy.
And, of course, being a governmental official doesn't mean you have higher morals. Here's a story out of Florida. In Miami-Dade, former school board member, was arrested. Her name is Lubby Navarro. She was arrested for fraudulent spending on official district credit cards. She made nearly $100,000 worth. She's accused of making $100,000 worth of unauthorized purchases for personal reasons.
And she was the official that we had contacted because she had sought to officially recognize the National Day of Prayer in the schools, and she joined the rest of the school board in officially recognizing the National Day of Prayer and ensuring that students are encouraged to organize and have a day to pray together. So, of course, innocent until proven guilty, but we certainly want to point out that public piety is no assurance of personal morality. And I think we have time just to briefly say, as we go out, that this past week we celebrated Religious Freedom Day, September 16th, which is an acknowledgement of the Virginia Statute for Religious Liberty that Thomas Jefferson penned, saying nobody should be compelled to attend, direct, or support a place of worship. And this is very much endangered. It's in many of our state constitutions, and we think that every day should be Religious Freedom Day.
After the break, Margaret Downey with the Freethought Society will tell us about an exciting event celebrating Thomas Paine's birthday. And then FFRF Director of Communications Amit Paul will speak with Vamsi Mata, an untouchable member of India's lowest class, about how religion oppresses minorities. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker. Margaret Downey is the founder and president of the Free Thought Society, which was formerly known as the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia. She also founded the Anti-Discrimination Support Network, which reports on and deals with discrimination against atheists.
In 1994, Margaret founded the Freethought Society Thomas Paine Memorial Committee and is now on the board of the new Thomas Paine Memorial Association, as I am also, working to erect a permanent memorial, or really monument, to Thomas Paine in Washington, D.C. And you have some exciting news to report, Margaret. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for hosting me today. I am so excited to be the president of the Thomas Paine Memorial Association, and working with you, Annie Laurie, has been an absolute joy. We've made a lot of progress. We have about $500,000 in pledges and donations so far, and we were able to hire a required consulting firm in Washington, D.C., that started our site selection process.
Yes, and this is ongoing. And, of course, this is because we got Congress to authorize us to be the group that gets to put up a memorial to Thomas Paine. You know, we saw this bill Congress at the end of 2022.
We were very fortunate to have Congressman Jamie Raskin propose House Bill 6720 in 2022. And within that same year, we had enough support to move forward, and President Biden signed it into law in December of that year.
And then Jamie Raskin and Victoria Spartz, who also co-sponsored, are now serving as our honorary chairs, correct?
Yes. It's so wonderful because Victoria Spartz is a Republican. So the bill had become bipartisan by the time it reached the desk of President Biden.
So Margaret,
there's a lot about it.
So for the very few listeners of our show, Margaret, who don't know who Thomas Paine was, can you briefly remind them?
Well, he was considered a founder of the United States of America. In fact, he was the first one to ever put the term United States of America in writing. And he actually began people, colonists in particular, thinking about breaking away from England with his wonderful 50-page pamphlet, Common Sense. And we are so honored in Philadelphia to claim that he wrote Common Sense in Philadelphia. There is a historical marker there denoting that it was published in Philadelphia. And then he went on to write the American Crisis Papers, 13 in all, which George Washington had read to the troops as they were struggling to stay alive and to fight for independence. So, you know, he is credited for really fighting the war with his pen, because of his encouragement of the troops. But he also served in the Continental Army. And we can claim that Thomas Paine was one of the very first veterans of the United States of America.
And then for the Free Thought Connection, what is that, Margaret?
The Free Thought Connection?
Well, he thought freely about everything. His stance against slavery is well known, but we're going to make extra attention made to his writings, anti-slavery work, as well as his abolitionist work. We have an event coming up January 29th, an online presentation with music and historians and scholars talking about the efforts of Thomas Paine to end slavery.
So this is well-timed,
program,
right? Because his
Pardon?
Birthday is January 29th, and that's just before it ushers in Black History Month. So it kind of...
Yes, that as well as Thomas Paine's birth date.
So tell us more about this. This is an international event. This is an annual event that you and the Thomas Paine Memorial Association have put on. And how can people join it? When is it? And who else is going to be there?
Yes, it's going to be spectacular. We have an entertainment such as Cynthia McDonald singing Thomas Paine themed songs. She's a member of the Godless Gospel.
Yeah.
Delivered to us three beautiful renditions of Thomas Paine songs, including yours, Dan Barker.
Oh, the world is my country.
Is my country.
Wow.
Yes. So then we go on to host a very famous historian, Richard Newman, Teddy Reeves from the Smithsonian African American Museum. He's a curator. He'll be talking. We have Dom Jones, a newbie, a new person to Free Thought. She is a California leader, a feminist, and she's got some very interesting comments.
Aren't there four members of Congress?
People.
Who are the members of Congress?
Oh, yes. We've got Chantel Brown from Ohio. Jamal Bowman from New York. He is in the district of New Rochelle, where Thomas Paine lived. And, of course, we have Jamie Raskin opening up the entire event with his wonderful words of encouragement and support. This event is co-sponsored by some wonderful people. And, you know, Freedom From Religion Foundation is a co-sponsor, the Center for Inquiry, the Black Nonbelievers, and, of course, the Free Thought Society and the Tom Paine Memorial Association.
And then I think that we should say that history professor Christopher Cameron, who's the author of Black Freethinkers, A History of African-American Secularism, is the co-host with you and helped. You two created this event, right?
Right. We've had a lot of fun. We've been working on this for several months, and he and I have come up with not only great speakers, but a program that will move and inspire and actually educate people on why Thomas Paine deserves a monument in Washington, D.C.
And how can people register, and when does it take place?
Well, they can find us on social media through Meetup. It's called the Anti-Slavery Efforts of Thomas Paine. And they can find us on websites such as the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the Free Thought Society has it. Also on social media, Facebook has an event created.
Excuse me, the Thomas Paine Memorial Association website.
Yes, it's there too.
And it begins at what time on Monday, January 29th?
It's at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Well, thank you so much, Margaret, for filling us in on all these exciting details. It'll be a really great event. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
We're taking a break, and when we come back, Vamsi Mata, who is an untouchable member of India's lowest Dalit class, will tell us about how religion is oppressing minorities. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is the official interview portion of Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker. FFRF's Director of Communications, Amit Pal, spoke recently here in our studio with Vamsi Mata. Vamsi Mata is an actor, theater director, and artist in residence at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They spoke about caste. Vamsi is himself from the lowest class in India.
But caste, a religiously based system of discrimination, isn't limited to India. It also carries over to the United States. Let's listen to that fascinating interview with Vamsi Mata, who belongs to the so-called untouchable Dalit people.
I have with me in FFRF's studio a guest all the way from India who's here at the University of Wisconsin for a year to talk about caste-based oppression and the fight back, both in India and, you'd be surprised by this, in the United States also. Sri Vamsi Mata, an artist in residence at the University of Wisconsin, is an India-based theater actor, writer, and director. His practice is influenced by his Dalit identity, and we'll be talking about that, experience and social location. The histories of his family and community inform the questions, topics, and mediums that Vamsi engages with. His most recent traveling show is titled Come Eat With Me, which my family and I were privileged to watch here in Madison just very recently. His play Star in the Sky, about the institutional murder of a Dalit PhD scholar in 2016, won second place at the prestigious Tata Literature Live Sultan Padamsi Award for Playwriting. While in Madison, Wisconsin, Vamsi is excited to engage with UW-Madison's own reckoning with historic iniquities and contributing to its present campus culture and goals of fostering a greater sense of inclusion and belonging through the arts. So welcome to FFRF's Free Thought Radio Show, Vamsi.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
So Vamsi, let's start with the basics for our audience. And I think our listeners probably have a vague notion of what caste is. But how much of it is rooted in social practice and how much of it comes from the core of Hinduism itself?
That's a very interesting question, because the social practice is very much tied with the religion back in India. Because if you look at where do you find things written about caste or origins of caste, is all in the text that are considered as early Hindu texts, or, you know, they became the law of the land for a long time, like the Manusmriti, the Vedas, the Upanishads. They all have ideals of caste and how caste engages with say food, with each other, with water, with land, with people, so everything. So yeah, it is part of the social culture, but which is also part of the religion, that is the Hindu religion.
And Vamsi, you call yourself a Dalit. Can you please explain that term?
So if you look at the caste system, it's a hierarchy. So there are the Brahmins, the priest caste, the Kshatriyas, who are the warrior caste. Then there are the Vaishyas, the merchant caste. And then there are Shudras, who sort of work for the above three castes. And then what people don't talk about is the outcasts, the people who are not part of the caste system. They are the Adivasis, the indigenous folk. And then there are the formerly known as the untouchables. So the government recognizes them as scheduled caste, and scheduled tribe are Adivasis. Dalit is a word that has been appropriated by the community. It has been reclaimed to call themselves Dalit. It's a political term.
And it means?
Dalit means broken, but it's sort of a political identity right now, which sort of empowers ourselves. Yeah.
Broadly speaking, what is the current state of the rights of Dalits in India?
This is a question that I wake up with every day, because, you know, just now, while you came to pick me up, I was reading the news that a Dalit girl, a minor Dalit girl in UP was raped. And if you look at the statistics, every day at least 10 Dalit women or girls are sexually assaulted in India. And this is only things that are recorded. So there are a lot of cases that are not recorded because they are scared to live in a system like that. It's very bad.
And Vamsi, how about on a personal level, if I may ask, how has being a Dalit playwright, artist, and activist affected your life journey?
So before I say about myself, I think I will broadly say about what the cultural space does to people from the marginalized locations, because one needs to understand that caste affects everything. It's not having cultural capital, social capital, and of course, economic capital. So what it does to people like me especially is to second guess ourselves. You often ask yourself, is my voice important? Is it necessary? What the society tries to do is to tell that caste is a personal problem, it's your problem, but it is actually a structural problem. And institutions, be it educational institutions, cultural institutions, any institution that sort of has, you know, people living in itself is a microcosm of the society. You know, so it often gatekeeps you from entering these places. And also if you enter, you're sort of deemed to be like, I might not have enough voice, or I might not be valued enough it diminishes your value. That is my experience, because to come here to, say, to a university like Wisconsin-Madison, it's big deal. You know, if you look at the history of people coming to America and study, the number of Dalits who are coming in is very less. Forget how many are coming to sort of teach. So it is a challenge. It is always a challenge. But it's also important that I occupy these spaces. So every time I think of what does it mean to go into a cultural space, my immediate notion is like, what do I do to occupy this space? Because that is important. That is assertion for me.
And in a large way, the discourse around caste in India has unfortunately been almost monopolized by the affirmative action programs that there are for Dalit folks, and the resentment among upper dominant communities at that, hasn't it?
No, absolutely. No, this is a question that often people ask, like, how do you understand, how do you make sense of affirmative actions? Again, I'll go back to numbers, because I think the world runs on numbers. If you look at the population percentage, the Dalits, the Adivasis, the scheduled castes and scheduled tribes, they make about 25%. And the other backward caste, they make about 50%. So if you look at affirmative action, that is 49.5% that is offered, is for about 70 to 80% of the population. So if you just look at that numbers, that tells you what exactly affirmative action is. And now there are many organizations are coming together to sort of ask and say that we need affirmative action in private sectors as well, which is the way to go forward, I feel.
And just staying for a moment longer in India, for our listeners who may not know, India has probably the most right-wing government in its history since independence, headed by a person named Narendra Modi, very anti-minority, and also in its own way as Professor Christopher Jaffrelo, who I interviewed for FFRF's radio show, Free Thought Radio, told me, it's also about a reassertion of upper caste dominance after an expansion of Dalit rights in the 1980s and 90s. Vamsi, as a Dalit activist and artist, what's your take on this?
Like, on paper, the policies are very good. Like, reservation should have worked. Affirmative action should have worked. It is not implemented well.
You mean in the past?
You know? So it has always been their rights versus the other rights. But what I see now is that people are more about that reaffirming. You know, like, I work with grassroots organizations. My partner works with grassroots organizations. The kind of impunity people, especially from dominant castes, have gotten, the free hand from the government, is something that is not imaginable. It is, they are able to express their anger, their hatred much more freely because they see people in power who are doing that. And this is not just in, say, offices or in societies where people live. You know, the way the women especially are treated by the dominant caste men, you know. That is why it is important to say that it's not just about caste, but it is also about patriarchy. And that is why the word Brahminical patriarchy is very, very important in our context, that you're fighting anything. If you look at Islamophobia, if you look at rights of the gender and sexual minorities, anything, I think Brahminical patriarchy is the one that is sort of giving them the hand to oppress the other.
We have to take a break, Vamsi.
Okay.
I'm with Sri Vamsi Mata, a Dalit activist and artist based here at the University of Wisconsin. And when we come back, we'll talk about caste in the United States. So stay with us.
And that is Amit Paul, FFRF's Director of Communications, interviewing Vamsi Mata. And we will be right back after this break.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
And I'm Dan Barker. Let's continue listening to FFRF's Director of Communications, Amit Paul, speaking with artist-in-residence Vamsi Mata.
Welcome back. I have you here in FFRF's studio for Free Thought Radio with me, Shri Vamsi Mata, who is a Dalit playwright, artist, and activist here at the University of Wisconsin as an artist-in-residence. And we are talking about caste-based oppression in India and the United States and the fight back. So Vamsi, let's move from India to the United States. And this may surprise people who aren't really keeping tabs on this issue in the U.S. as to how much this has been in the news and in the fore recently. Seattle has actually passed an anti-caste discrimination measure. California was going to pass one, but then, much to the dismay of activists, California Governor Gavin Newsom actually vetoed the bill, and we'll get into the reasons why. So can you talk about caste in the U.S. and why there's been pushback regarding such measures?
I have a lot to say about that, but I will keep it a little brief because, yeah, you know, one needs to understand what exactly is caste, because as you can see, you know, in India, Hinduism is where the caste has sort of originated from, but as time passed, when people converted to other religions, caste also sort of seeped into them. So caste has this power to sort of penetrate, mutate itself. So when people travel from India to America, it has traveled with them. It might not penetrate as the way it does in India, but caste has its own ways that it functions here. In workplace, especially people from marginalized caste locations are not given higher positions. Places where they eat, places where they live, there's a lot of information available about how people are discriminated when they are renting out their place. The food, festivals. So these are some places where caste sort of works. But what has boggled me is, what does it mean to ban a ban? You know, because the bill wanted to look at, you know, banning caste discrimination, and someone vetoed that, no, we'll not have that ban. What does that mean? Because there's a lot of pushback that is coming from the Hindus in America, be it the Hindu American Foundation or, you know, yeah, different parts of RSS, yeah, which are operating,
yeah,
here.
Yeah, the RSS, for our listeners, is the fountainhead and the cultural organization behind the current government in India. And the Hindu American Foundation is very active here. And here I have to narrate an anecdote. I'm often representing FFRF at conferences. And when I'm tabling, very often somehow, my next door neighbors, so to speak, are from the Hindu American Foundation, which has used the whole notion of Hindu phobia to squelch any discussion of caste. Yes, please, Vamsi.
Yeah, and they have been, you know, tremendously working in fighting this bill. And when often people ask, you know, what does it mean caste doesn't work here? At the end of the day, you're a brown person here. I think that is what they fear. The moment we introduce caste, then there's further bifurcation in an already minority community, that is the brown people from South Asia. They sort of, now there will be a brown oppressor and a brown oppressed. I think this is something that people doesn't want to affect the status quo. That is the same thing in India and the same thing in the U.S. The perfect example is what has happened in New Jersey with the new big, huge temple,
yes,
that was built. If you go back to the news where the workers who were brought in, they mostly come from marginalized caste locations in India. They have sued the organization that was building the temple because they were paid $1.40 or something like that. And that is insane. At the end of the whole thing, they got about $450. And they were living in bad conditions. But unfortunately, they lost that case. The people, I think it's the BAPS organization.
Yeah, so this is the largest temple outside India. Yeah. And it's been built in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Just got inaugurated. Yeah.
Yeah, and to understand what that means, to bring people and not pay them, that is caste.
Yes. Even here in Madison, you were saying that people...
Yeah, yeah. So there's some. There's a organization that was started by the students, which started because students were not allowed to eat meat in their houses because their roommates were upper caste Hindus who were like, we are not comfortable with this. So either there was a pushback about the food or they were not given rooms.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Vamsi, you've done this very well, just building on the consciousness that Isabel Wilkerson's book, which is titled Caste, actually, and which I have a copy of, has inculcated into at least the informed segment of the American population about the parallels between caste and race. And in fact, there's a movie coming out on the book, too.
Yeah,
so can you talk a bit about that?
I'm not the expert there, but a lot of people have tried to put caste and race together. One thing that I really take away from Wilkerson's book is she says, if race is skin, caste is like the bones. It's invisible. It works in mysterious ways. And now because of, you know, globalization, education, many things, you know, it's sort of mutated into something else. It is invisible. That is a primary question because you don't know where and how. You know, people often ask, oh, I don't see it, because you don't see it because it is invisible. Only people who's facing it knows. Because a lot of these questions of caste are notions of purity, like about the food you eat, where you drink water, whose food you eat. And it becomes a question of, oh, this is my choice, or this is about hygienic reasons, but it is not. It is caste working in mutated fashion.
And certainly I know this among the diaspora, there are caste and community-based organizations of all sorts.
Absolutely.
So they take pride in that.
So
in Isabel Wilkerson's book, there's a remarkable figure depicted in the movie too. His name is Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar, who's called the father of the Indian Constitution. He was actually had a double PhD, one from Columbia and one from the London School of Economics, and then went back as a Dalit activist and became one of the most prominent figures in India and Indian history. So Ambedkar had a memorable quote. He said, I was born a Hindu, but I will not die a Hindu. And he converted to Buddhism just shortly before his death. Due to the religion-based oppression, have there been attempts by Dalits in an organized or maybe not so organized way to say, let's just leave this whole religion thing altogether and become rationalists or skeptics or humanists, because, you know, religion has been the reason that we've been oppressed for, you know, centuries and centuries.
As you said, Ambedkar, you know, he's my hero. And before he died, he converted to Buddhism. And this is what something he said. He said, convert to any religion that calls you invalid. Convert to something that doesn't oppress you, something that teaches you about equality, liberty, and fraternity. And his call was to convert. Convert is a big part of his education to us. So what I want to bring here is, what does religion do, especially for marginalized folk? You know, because what religion also provides you is with community, with spaces of worship, places that you call your own, power to be empowered. So what religion does, especially to marginalized, because a lot of people, if you look at the history of India, even before Buddhism, people have converted to Christianity, to Islam. Buddhism is the near past, but if you go beyond, there have been mass Christian movements by the American Baptist Mission, by the Lutheran Protestant movement, all of this, and Islam. So what this religion does to people, especially in from the Dalit community, is that they gave them a community.
Sure.
I repeat this idea that religion is for the man and not man for the religion. Like, I think Ambedkar also went ahead and he studied all the religions. He fought and understood what a religion could do. Even he had questions with Buddhism because it has history of violence, Sri Lanka, what is happening in Myanmar.
Yeah.
So he reinterpreted the religion for himself. It's very scientific. It is based on equality. And that's how he created or reinterpreted the Navayana Buddhism. Navayana means new vehicle.
Yeah.
So having said that, that is what religion did, especially people who converted to Christianity or Islam or Buddhism. If you look at, especially from where I come from Andhra Pradesh in India, the southern part of India.
Yeah.
The Maoist movement and the communist movement were at its peak at a certain point. So a lot of these people were influenced by what Marxism taught them. So in my family, I had Hindus, I had Christians, I had Buddhists, and I had someone called the rationalists.
Yes.
You know?
And Dan Barker and I, when we went to India, we went with a lot of these rationalist groups. So it's kind of interesting that you have such a mixed family background. So it's been such a pleasure, Vamsi, to have you in the studio on Free Thought Radio to talk about caste-based oppression and the fight back in India and the United States Thank you so much for being our guest and for enlightening us on these very profound issues.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And that was FFRF's Director of Communications, Amit Pal, interviewing the Dalit actor and artist in residence here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Vamsi Mata.
And yes, thanks to Amit for doing that fascinating interview. And we also want to give you a heads up to watch once again for FFRF's iconic commercial featuring Ron Reagan, unabashed atheist, not afraid of burning in hell, on 60 Minutes, which is a top 10 show. It was always our goal to get the ad on 60 Minutes. They didn't want it for 8 years, but now they have accepted our money. And so you can look for it next week and the week after. And this is only made possible thanks to kind donors to FFRF's advertising fund. But we hope that you'll enjoy seeing it. It's history to get it on such a commercial enterprise to make free thought mainstream. And I also want to say that we opened our show with quotes from famous freethinkers that happen to be born today. There are famous freethinkers born every day, and FFRF has compiled an online compendium of them with little bios and documentation of their freethought views and quotes. So you can check out freethinkers born every day at ffrf.org. /day, ffrf.org/day. Very easy to find, and you can sign up to get that into your inbox. And we really think it's important that the world know the many great freethinkers out there and what they've contributed to the world.
We want to say hello to listeners in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, to WOOM-LP, and in Bryn Mawr, to WZML. Right here in Madison, Wisconsin, greetings to listeners to WIDE and WMUULP. And in southern Wisconsin, in Janesville, to Community Radio WADR. In College Station, Texas, KEOS. In San Marcos, Texas, KZSM. In Columbia, Missouri, KOPN. In Eugene, Oregon, KEPW. And then over in Vermont, New Hampshire, it's right on the border, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio. And in Kingston, Rhode Island, the university station there is WRIU. And hello to listeners in Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen to WRFI. And, of course, hello to all you many thousands of international podcast listeners. Give us a thumbs up on your provider. And, of course, all listeners, tell your friends and family to learn more about Freethought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
As for more information or just join us at ffrf.org, you can support Freethought Radio by becoming an FFRF member, but there's so much more you will support our vital work to keep religion out of government and promote Freethought. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Freethought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope